Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Intuition Baker Psychic Hour. First, let me let everybody know how to get a hold of us before we get into our conversation. 914-338-0164. That's our call-in number for the show. Please do press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. And we do invite our listeners to join us on Facebook and Twitter. Those accounts are linked on our Blog Talk Radio profile homepage, the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad you agree.
Well, there wasn't there much there to disagree with. They're just cold, hard facts.
Cold, hard facts. Perhaps I could start, we could have an argument on there. I could present some things that might cause you to disagree.
Well, not really. But, you know,
I bet I could.
Well, maybe. You know, like I said before, it's...
Like you said before, when?
When Chris and I are walking down the street, we often are stopped by passerbys. They go, hey,
passersby.
Guys.
Passersby.
Passersby. And they go, hey, guys, what's up with the astral realm? One of the more common questions we're asked. It doesn't matter.
It's the supermarket, gas station. Yeah.
Well, the good news is there's room enough for everyone up there. They never run out of room in the astral realm. Every time I go up there, I mean, sometimes it's a crowded room. I encounter a lot of souls and spirits. Occasionally an angel, too, drops by and says hello. The astral realm, angels go there, but it's like an angel going to the park. To the park.
Okay.
And they have a higher place in the mansion.
Well, that's what I was, you know, interesting, because I was telling you about a dream I had about the White House. I was at the White, but it wasn't the same White House, but it was the White House. It was a huge house at night. I was looking up at it, and then I ended up going inside. So funny you mentioned
the mansion. You know what's funny? Jesus really made a blunder, I got to tell you. He said, you know, let go of all your possessions. He says to this rich man, get rid of your home and all of your riches and follow me. He tells everybody to go on the path of simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turns around and says, in my father's mansion, there are many rooms. So... in other words, God, according to Christ, in that maybe that corruption of translation, in other words, God's got a big mansion.
Well,
and everyone's staying there. I know it's a symbolism, but he could have said, in my father's heavenly place.
Well, maybe he did. Again, translation,
well, you don't know.
Who knows?
I mean, Life of Brian, according to Monty Python. Somebody listening to the Sermon on the Mount thought that Christ said, blessed are the cheesemakers. So maybe there was a corruption of language. And I'll tell you, if Groucho Marx was there was like a total corruption.
I feel like I'm watching a stand-up act this morning.
Yeah. What a crowd. What not a crowd. But anyways, you know, this. What is all this? This talk about the astral realm, like when you die, do you automatically go there, or do you have to get a map, get directions? when you get there, are you maybe allowed in, maybe not allowed in? What in the heck is the astral realm? Well, the astral realm and the etheric realm are basically the first energy fields that we encounter when we leave the body. Because by theory and potentially by fact, spirits can't really live in the physical world. That's for humans. Spirits are encountered in the physical world, but that's usually at the threshold of the astral realm. So telling a spirit to live in the physical world would be like us living underwater with lungs. We can't stay
humans living underwater, which is impossible.
So this astral realm, I mean, it's sort of like the ocean. We can get in there for a while and we have to come out. We have to come out because our physical bodies can't be separated from our astral bodies for any long length of time, except if we're in a coma or something. But the idea that there are different layers in the astral realm pertaining to the advancement of the psyche, of the consciousness, of the energy field of a person's lifetime is very significant, because most of us, when we go into the astral realm, we enter the lower element of the astral realm. Now, some people will say, no, I know I've gone up where angels are and God and the light. Yeah, okay. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. But for the most part, going to the astral realm is like taking a Hollywood tour bus. How many on that tour bus get to go into the movie stars' mansions? I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but most of us, when we go enter the astral realm, we're on tour. We take a tour, universal tour, and we don't really get that deep into the depth of the astral realm. But angels and spirits and guides, they can easily go down to the lower levels of the astral realm.
And that's typically, the lower astral realm is typically where a human soul that is astral projecting into the astral realm will encounter an angel. It's less common, like you're saying, to go into those upper realms, unless you're at a really high energy human being.
Here's an analogy. A whale can go down to the greatest depths where we can't go. We can't go there, but they can also come to the surface of the ocean. That's kind of like what a spirit can do. We can only go so deep. If we go too high into the astral realm, because we're still attached to a body, we can be in danger, because we're not equipped to be there. So it's just like deep sea diving. We can go to a certain depth and then we implode. We suffocate. We explode. The same thing is with the astral realm. We can only go as human beings so high into that realm before it gets very dangerous, because even Christ said, don't touch me after he died. Don't touch me, don't touch me. You guys are humans. The idea that Moses, he had to bow down, take his shoes off. He came down, he was glowing like a sun. I mean, you can't be in the presence of God, more or less lower angels, without having some effect on your energy field. And the problem with venturing into the astral realm when you're alive is that you still have a body. So there's a problem there. There's a problem there. But in the astral realm, it's kind of a wonderful place to go, especially when you're having a dream.
Well, yeah, it can be, but it can also be disturbing, depending on the area that you're in.
Anything can be disturbing, yeah. Any element of life can be disturbing. This actress just drowned, and apparently she's She drowned in the lake.
Lake, I forgot.
A recreational area.
Yeah, but it's supposedly very treacherous for swimmers because of like blind spots or something. They're unable to see.
There's deep spots and trees underneath and then vegetation you can get entangled in. The water's very cold. There may be strange currents going on. But look at the analogy here. The four-year-old climbs back up on the boat and the adult.
Well, the problem, though, is that she wasn't wearing a life vest, and the child was. So go ahead. But,
well, the analogy is, you know, this is a place of recreation. I mean, it's known to be somewhat dangerous, but she's gone there before. Now, the astral realm is a place of recreation, too, in some respects. Because it's a free-for-all. You get to go there, and potentially you go there without your body anymore, and you're in this realm. Now, that's contingent on what kind of human life you had, and that will tell you where you're going to end up in the astral realm, what you're going to be, you know, what so-called with your loved ones and running around and having a good time, enjoying it, or, quote, resting in peace, or having some dilemma wherein you're being encountered by spirits and guides and being told you got to go back. It's not time yet for you to be here, or you haven't advanced enough to even enter this realm. You need to go back. Well, the same thing happens when we somewhat dream. When we dream, we can actually encounter our life in reverse. We see what we've been doing in past lives. We sometimes venture into the future and see potentially what's going to happen to us. We encounter, sometimes when we encounter people we think we know, a lot of spirits will mimic or morph into actual people that we know and carry on conversations with us.
It gets difficult to differentiate that if you're not experienced.
Yeah, it's kind of like
you think, you know, that you're having a visit from your grandmother when it's really, you know, a spirit that's impersonating
right. That
energy.
I was having trouble with that as a kid, and my grandfather, who was a psychic, made me watch countless episodes of To Tell the Truth, so I could tell who was the fake and who wasn't, and I got pretty good at it.
Yeah, and you went to court to
see who was
to train you to see who was telling the truth.
Yeah.
To see if you could perceive that.
Yeah. So it's true. So there, the element of, you know, do you really encounter someone you actually knew in the astral realm? Perhaps. Happens often. But you can also encounter spirits and guides that will morph into those people, sometimes with good intention and sometimes with less than good intention, because there are creepy elements and spirits and forms out there that don't particularly register on a high caliber of morals and ethics in terms of human terms. That means that in the astral realm, we've got this weird assemblage of people, not people, spirit forms, good, the angels, bad, the demons. And they are all in there when we leave the body, whether in dream or whether we potentially deliberately astral project, or even when we die, they're around. And but it's not, this isn't meant to be a dire description of the astral realm. Actually, the astral realm is fun. I love going there. Even when I have trouble landing, I used to have more trouble landing in my body when you have that deep freeze.
Yeah, I just had that experience recently where I was stuck and couldn't get back in my body. Well, I was in my body, but couldn't completely connected so I could wake up. And I was saying, help. I was trying to talk to you and you just were snoring away.
Yeah. That's one of my past lives as one of the seven dwarfs. What happens is when it gets rude, it gets kind of rude and crazy, but you're coming back into your body via the astral realm, and your conscious body wakes up too soon. So when the conscious body wakes up too soon and the astral body is coming in, it is a traffic jam. And because the astral body wants to come back into the sleeping physical body when it's nice and peaceful and calm, no disruptions, don't wake up, is going to cause a traffic jam. So that's what happens. Now, unless you're really old, like you're 90 or 98, and you can't get through the oxygen exchange during that passage and you end up dying.
You can die.
Usually you die, people that die in that form, they die with on their backs with their mouths open. And that is, they potentially die during the transition of the astral body getting back into the body. Now, of course, as they're old and all this, but I know verbatim that a lot of people die that way. That's why I don't suggest when you're older to sleep on your back. Not a good idea. Potentially you could get in trouble. And typically when people die in their sleep, they're on their back, typically. But when you're in the astral realm and you're basically healthy, don't panic, because in the transition of coming from the astral realm into the physical realm through the astral body, you're going to get in. It's not going to be, you're not going to die or suffocate or anything like that. You'll eventually get in as soon as the consciousness allows the astral realm to come in. And you don't have to be trained to do that. It will just naturally happen. The astral body has to get back into the physical body. They don't want to be stranded. And there's a silver cord anyways, as long as you're alive, that's connecting the two energies together. So there's no immediate concern. A lot of times, though, what happens is that when the physical body goes to sleep, and the astral body goes out to play and frolic in the astral realm, lower energies will surround the physical body, waiting for the astral body to come back in so they can play havoc with it. They do that. And that's sometimes what occurs when people wake up and they think they see a demon above their head or something like that, or something sucking their breath out. A lot of times that's their own astral body, and they're just panicking and confusing it with something else. But a lot of times it's a demon chasing them back into the house of the body. But that's not all of that is just the special effects of the astral realm. Why do we go out into the astral realm? Why? Well, why do we go to the bathroom? Why do we let our animals out in the backyard? Why do we, you know, we're cooped up with this virus. Why do we need to get out? You got to realize the soul
needs the energy of the astral realm.
Oh, God, yes.
If the physical body was all that the soul could connect to, then it would be a much worse experience.
Absolutely.
For the
soul
physical body.
Is cooped up in this physical body, and it's irritating to the soul. I mean, they have to be there. There's no choice. But it's irritating. They went to the yard. They need the energy of the astral realm, because that is where the soul really gets to feel the expression of eternity, of all the energies that transcend time and space in an immediate sense of existence. So that is where you really get past the breakers, get past the waves, and you're floating listlessly into this vast ocean. And there's a certain depth and quiet. They say you can't hear a scream in space. You don't hear sounds. You sense vibrations. The deeper you go into the ocean, the deeper you go into space, there's a vibrational field, an electromagnetic field, a cosmic energy field that has no language. except for the language of vibration, which is of great depth. And when I've gone out into the astral realm, and language is, I mean, you can go into the astral realm and experience language and all kinds of strange things to the ear, to the inner ear. But the deeper you go into the astral realm, the less you hear. And then you have to understand the beautiful music of vibration. That vibration is a language all unto itself, but it's not even a language. It's a vibration. And to understand the energy of a vibration takes a lot of research, takes a lot of time and practice. Because you have to first, I used to do this as a kid, I would try to lock myself into total silence and understand, like Peter, like Garfunkel and Paul Simon, understand the sound.
You were going to say Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Silence. Yeah, Peter, Paul, Mary. But,
three.
No. But forget them. They talked with a hammer. Mm. We're talking about Simon and Garfunkel. So I would say as an exercise, if you really want to start to comprehend the sounds, if this is of interest to you, the sounds of the astral world, lock yourself into a silent space and listen to what silence sounds like. Because silence is a sound. But it's not comprehensible to the perception of language or noise. Silence is barely a vibration. What is silence? Because to experience silence is to experience consciousness. So obviously, without consciousness, there is no silence. Because you have to experience any particular phenomena in order to have consciousness. If there was nothingness, but no one there to experience it, then what is nothingness? There's no definition. So there's a form of consciousness that is carried into the greatest depths of the astral realm, wherein we can experience a vibration, or if you will, lack of a better word, silence itself. Now, in the lower realm, we hear a lot of noise. So we'll hear a lot of noise in the lower realm.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's arguing, sometimes it's just eternal noise in our brain when we're listening to our thoughts. A dream sometimes brings our thoughts into a sound, which is interesting. Because we can walk around in a conscious state and hear ourselves thinking. Think about that. We hear ourselves thinking. Or we can imagine a person and hear them talking to us. We don't really hear it. We imagine it. But the imagination is so potent that we actually hear what we imagine. Same thing in the astral realm. What you think you imagine is actually there. But in the astral realm, it materializes via the energy of vibration, not physicality. Now, of course, it's all pertaining to what kind of energy you are, because the more you study this and the more you intensify your energy field, the more you're going to be able to go deeper and deeper and deeper into the astral realm and experience things that you normally would never experience in any other form of life. Kristen's now posing it like
a... Well, as you've been talking...
Aphrodisiac.
No, as you've been talking, because I... As you've been talking...
Aphrodite,
Would you say aphrodisiac?
Well, maybe
great.
You look like
I hope so.
I don't know what she's doing.
No,
anyway.
I know. You've been talking, but I've been actually not engaging because I'm...
Yeah, I was wondering why your head was back and you were making a loud noise.
No, you mentioned the death of Naya Rivera. So as you were going on your little tangent, I started gathering some facts. Yeah. about Naya Rivera. It was interesting. I was listening and wanting to contribute, but also I wanted to kind of, because you mentioned Naya Rivera is drowning, or she's not been found yet, obviously. But since you mentioned that, I wanted to mention her birth date to you and everybody else.
Oh,
actually,
I don't want her birth.
So she's born on 1/12/1987. She's 29/11 too. But she was 30. She's 33. So 4 years beyond the age of 29. However, which actually is in her.
What's her year?
1/12/87. Good numbers in the year.
Well, she accomplished. She was famous, and she accomplished a lot. So that's the 87.
Right.
Who knows? She might have been spiritual, or high ideals and helped people. But that 11.
Yeah, and so the thing is, and I mentioned this to you yesterday, without really doing any research online. I said to you, several people from that cast have died, and it's weird. Another one is dying, and I said, these are young people. These are not, this is a TV show that features young performers. And so I just was doing a little research. In fact, 1, 2, 3, 4 people now, if we include Naya Rivera, have died that have either been on the show or a part of producing the show. Additionally, there's another person, a boyfriend of a cast member, who died prematurely. And they're all, look at their birth dates. They've all got 11s going on.
Yeah.
And they all, the group of them together, become a 28-10-1. So it's interesting because, is the show cursed? I wonder.
Well, the show isn't.
Is there a curse in... Yeah, I know the show isn't cursed. Is there a curse or tribal connection between these people that have all, they've assembled onto the show and now they're dying?
It's so interchangeable. It's a tribal thing.
5'11", 8'7", the only person with he has a 1982, born in 1982, Mark Sailing, and he killed himself because he was about to be sentenced for, child abuse, sexual abuse. So, it was by his own hand. However, the others, Corey Monteith overdose, and they've all got every single one of them have 11s in their birth date, except for Mark Sailing. He does have an 11, 1982, but it's not a 11 in the month or day, which the rest of them have.
Yeah.
But
A lot of it is accountable to the fact that there is a
tribal,
and so the tribe members come back. They find a setting to reenact their energies, and that's where the Armageddon occurs for them. It becomes a self-destructive thing. Places can be cursed. I walked into places that were cursed. Oh. It had nothing to do with tribe. It just was cursed places. Sometimes where horrible things happened.
Like demons reside there.
A watering hole for demons. And you don't want to be around those places as if you don't have to be. But the idea of, for instance, Little Rascals, they say that there's a curse with the Little Rascals, Family Affair, the whole TV show with Brian Keith, who actually shot himself in the head, and the kids had terrible
drug problems and
drug
things
problems
like that.
And things, TV shows, because it's in the hot, the spotlight that we hear about these things, but there are curses on sets like that. And, so a lot of
when are you suggesting that there was a curse on the Little Rascals? That was a curse on set?
As a tribal energy, there's something going on there.
Well,
aside from the fact that they were somewhat used as actors, child actors, and it's not all what it seems, actually, Al Roach started the Little Rascals by listening to kids playing outside his window and decided to form this Little Rascal, our gang and the Little Rascals, which ultimately morphed into them getting older and other people came in that weren't in the original series. Weezer was gone and Stymie was gone and Froggy and Mickey, they came in and replaced them. Not to a better artistic quality, but the original Our Gang or and the Little Rascals, the earlier ones. But they have, wow. And now Spanky McFarlane, he sort of grew up and escaped all that. He was actually kind of a chubby, still remained chubby and happy and whatnot. He didn't have a huge demise like the other ones did. But they sure, Alfalfa, my mother knew Alfalfa, and he was a little bratty kid. She said that he once, they were on the school bus. He had a crush on her too. They were on a school bus, and he stood in front of the school bus with his hands on his hips and wouldn't let the school bus go. And he said, "I'm Alfalfa. You can't drive by me." He was a nut. He was a brat. He actually was killed in a gun accident. He turned out to be a pretty dark fellow. But as a kid, he was funny and he was talented. They all were. They all formed personalities. But, you know, I don't know, we're getting off what we were talking about, the actress.
It's relevant. I mean, relating it to other situations with people in the film industry or movie or television industry that have all, most of them died, deaths that are obviously before their natural life would have.
Yeah, you got to be careful. That Russian guy that was in Star Trek that got pinned by his car. He went outside of his car and got pinned and crushed.
That young guy.
The young guy that was supposed to
the car sore, like rolled down the hill.
Rolled down the
because
hill.
Because he had it in a, didn't have the emergency brake on.
We got to be careful out there. The energies of our lives are connected to a karmic, strong karmic energies that doesn't care about what a good person we are or anything like that. And some of it's destiny bound. But I don't want to get away from the topic that we're here to appreciate life and enjoy it. Yes, but I think we need to also be cautious. I'm more than irritated when I see people driving and having that leisure and enjoyment and driving recklessly on purpose. Like they're on the road and they go 90 miles.
Oh yeah, and it's the same thing with people setting off, you know, illegal fireworks and burning down trees and homes and putting people's lives in danger, killing pets. So, I mean, people must be accountable for their behavior. However, going out in a boat on a lake, I mean, that was not reckless. This woman took her 4-year-old child on a day trip to a lake and went swimming. I mean, maybe she should have worn her life jacket.
She should have worn her life jacket. Now, I don't know why she didn't. Maybe she fell on the adult. I don't think it's too restricting.
Lake is probably still, and there's no, like, you know, great waves. It's not like being on an ocean or in a river where there's a current. So
she was watching, you know, getting into the boat, the cameras picked up her watching her child behind her, making sure he was safe. She probably wanted to dive under the water and didn't want the restriction of having a life preserver on. But when you're with your kid, I don't know. It seemed like, I'm sure it was an accident in that regard. You know, it's, you've got to be careful. It's just a major common sense that you have to be careful.
Well, then, but I mean, you know, whether this was a destiny factor in her life, I mean, that has to be determined too. Was she destined to die? Was the association with these other people that were tribal, you know, members of the same tribe and all died prematurely? Was this destiny bound? And was there, you know, a darker force going on in
right.
her life? Not to say that she was involved in anything dark necessarily, but was there from past life or from this tribal connection a darker force, in, you know, responsible?
Yeah.
For,
I mean, for death? I just tragically, a client and a friend that I've known for over 34 years just tragically died by falling down, hitting her head on the pavement and
drowning
in the pool. And this person I've known, we had the same karmic and master number, but I've known her for over 30 years.
And she called the radio show once.
And she called the radio show
one time, but...
But she recently crossed over and there was an attempt to contact her. And she's left behind a lot of sad people.
A lot.
Shocked over her.
Yeah, because death. She was 51 years old.
She was 51,
so,
and I met her when she was like
16.
And we had quite a connection. And ultimately, we did more than just readings together. We engaged in other things, creatively speaking, as well as on a friendship basis. But you know, when something like this happens, and people are now gone, their physical essence is gone. What happens to the soul?
Well, and it's really sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I mean, it varies. What's going to happen to this woman's soul, that the 51-year-old that we knew, versus this Naya Rivera, and what factors contributed to their premature demise are all going to be contingencies in which the soul progresses in the astral realm. So, you know, for instance, if you drink and drive and lose your life, you're going to have a different or there's an accidental drowning where you're just watching your kid. It's going to be a different. Those are going to be different categories for the soul and how the soul progresses.
It's the same with, did a reading with Natalie Wood's daughter. I'm not going to mention her name, but Natalie Wood's daughter. And,
that's real hard to narrow. God, I'm not going to mention a name. It's going to be real tough to narrow it.
I know. But I had, the reason I say it is because it compelled me to go to Catalina and to feel her energy there. Which I did, and I won't mention what I picked up, but there was that energy field as well. There were other people that I remember, Ray Sharkey, who was an actor, and had the opportunity to connect with him. But there's been lots of people throughout time and space. And now the most tragic is this friend of mine that... that has crossed over. Now, being administered to angels and guides and spirits, this is happening with her, which is a great consolation.
Right. So that's what I was going to say. Her death was not a suicide. So when you commit suicide, for instance, it's being administered to angels and guides, or by angels and guides, is less common than if it was hers was accidental. I don't really want to go into the details too much.
No. But the point is, in crossing over the comforting essence, if a soul is enveloped by angels, guides, spirits that are loving, they're there to counsel, they're there to comfort, then this is of great consolation, because it it means that the soul is safe. Now, from there, whether the soul is reunited with loved ones or are their pets or whatever, is another obvious explanation and theory that these things move into place as well. But most important is when we cross over, who and what will we encounter in the astral realm? For those of us that are fortunate enough to encounter spirits and guides that love us, angels that protect us, this is of great comfort because their gravity level is pulled towards the soul. They know immediately that the soul has left the body, and they rush in like the best ambulance team you could imagine, and they're there to comfort and receive. In fact, if fate is such that the person is going to go, they may even be there at the time that the accident occurs. Because the attitude of fate is also contingent on the attitude of physical action. If our physical actions prompt us to have an accident, or if it's just our time, then the angels will back off, but be there to receive the soul. Because the soul to the angels is more important than the body. The body's going anyways. Whether it's going to be at 90 or 70 or 50 or 30 or 20, the body is not the substance that the angels and the guides, maybe the content is not the body itself. Now, that doesn't mean that angels and guides don't comfort the body or try to heal the body. This is absolutely true too, and protect the body. But in essence, it's not the shell that the angels are concerned about. It's the soul. And the soul, inside the soul, is the spirit, which cannot be destroyed, ever. It's eternal. And it comes from the holy sense of the spirit of God, which is more than the body of God. We eat of the body. We're aware of the body. God seems to have some sort of physical explanation in terms of our biblical text. But in essence, God is a spirit. His spirit moved over the waters. And everything beyond the spirit is in likeness. It's a likeness. It's not a exactness. So when we get into that core soul beat and spirit beat of energy, that's what we enter when we go into the astral realm, whether we're attached to the body or not. But not being attached to the body means we're not returning to the planet, at least in that lifetime.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that you're not going to return to the planet in another body.
Yeah, I mean, we happen to believe that you can return. You can return again and again and again. There's this movie that just came out. I was looking at it named Palm Springs. It's a runoff of Groundhog. It's called Palm Springs. There's another movie that just came out called The Old Guard, about superheroes that constantly die and come back and die and come back. It's more of an existential thriller, more moody and deeper than most of these superhero movies. The Palm Springs is two people who keep reliving the same day over and over again. Apparently, it's got humor in it. And Groundhog, we all know that film. But
no,
the idea...
we don't, actually.
Groundhog Day?
Oh, Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day.
I haven't seen it.
With Bill Murray. Good film.
I don't think I've seen it.
Anyway.
It's
a good film. These movies, you know, they're movies. They're not great works of art, but they're really
entertaining
movies.
I can't remember.
When we get into the element of going into the astral realm, we also get to, whether it's a privilege or not, we get to review our life. And angels will say, okay, here's the good things you did. Wow, look at that. Here's good things. Oops, here's a bad thing. Here's an irresponsible thing. Oh, that's going to have to be corrected. It's like looking at a term paper. Hey, we like your term paper, but let's talk about the mistakes. Let's get those mistakes corrected, and then we will turn in a new term paper. When I went to school, in the grammar school years even, I would write a paper, the teacher and I would correct it, and then I had to turn in a fresh copy with options made. No mistakes. Is that the way it worked for you?
No. Mm-mm. No, you wouldn't have to redo a paper unless it was like a failure. And then
Well, the teachers I had were.
Well, I don't think the same approach to education in my generation, because we're different generations. I think a lot's changed. I mean, certainly a lot's changed now. We may not even have schools anymore.
It did change.
As far as the structure,
when I went to school,
physical.
The teacher rang a school bell.
Shut up.
So when I was in high school and the buzzer came, I was still out there walking around. I thought, well, that's what is that now? I thought it was something from Time Machine for the Morlocks.
Did you really have school bell?
Yeah, we had a school bell.
Was this the 1700s or 1800s?
16.
Oh.
It was a school bell, and the teacher went out and rang it, the school bell. You don't know I'm in my 90s. But yeah, school bell, the old school bell, and the teacher would go out and ring it, and us kids would file in like sheep and go in. But then things changed, and they had the buzzard.
Buzzard.
The buzzard.
Not buzzard. Buzzard's
no, they
a
had
bird.
Buzzards. They got the kids. No, buzzards. The kids, the unruly kids, got to stay out longer in the playground, and then we were picked up by buzzards. I saw star marks on the back.
Okay.
But, you know, and it's interesting, talking about buzzards, the condors have returned to Sequoia Park.
Oh,
yes,
that's great.
So in spite of Trump trying to get rid of the Endangered Species Act, animals are returning. Just this
because of this corona
crisis, animals to return. And I'm all in favor of the Day of the Animals.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, aside from the other aspects of the coronavirus, which I find ridiculous.
Now, you see, it's strange because the mask is supposed to be, but there was a thing about a guy that did some house painting or something was wearing a mask. And they removed his mask, and you saw specks of
paint
all over
everywhere.
His face.
And
he was wearing a proper mask.
Proper mask.
Yeah.
Was he wearing it properly? I mean, that's the biggest thing about the mask is that, number one, people are wearing disposable masks over and over and over again. Two, masks are ill-fitting. I have this problem because I have a small head, unfortunately. You look better on TV with a big head. I've got a small head. So...
well,
I don't know. Maybe you can enlarge
whether
my head.
I'm either going to die of the COVID virus or I'm going to die suffocating in that mask. When I'm wearing the mask over my nose and mouth, I almost pass out.
Well, you don't wear a mask. I mean, you're a bandana. I mean, so, but still, that's very restrictive to breathing. And anyway, what happens with me is even with the ear loops tightened, like tied, the mask still slips off my face. And we were at a store on Sunday, and I was observing people with the mask halfway down their face, their nose is out of the mask. People are not wearing masks correctly. And Fauci in March, now he's backpedaled, but Fauci in March said it's ridiculous that people would wear masks. I do not recommend it because they're not going to be wearing them properly, and it's going to increase the rate of infection because the masks are going to be dirty. They're not going to be worn properly. And so leave the masks to the healthcare workers. Now that he's saying, well, you know, the only reason I said that is because of the shortage of masks. Of course, in his speech, he doesn't mention a shortage of masks as being the reason. He mentions the improper use of masks as being the reason to not recommend masks. Now it's being mandated and perhaps made into law in many states. I think it's I mean, you know, are we going to mandate the correct way to wear a mask, or is it just, you know, I mean,
it's a hard,
it's frustrating.
I mean, it's the human condition is going to potentially rebel. I mean, most time you see most people wearing a seatbelt, most people signal, but you have people who don't do anything, and there's more people who die in traffic than they do with this virus. So there's going to be violators.
I just want to say that I started wearing a mask prior to there being even a suggestion that people wear masks, because I saw people in stores wearing masks. And I thought, you know, I don't want to be that person that is, I don't want to be singled out for being disrespectful to others by not taking precautions, you know, to cover my face.
Yeah, this
face.
Is where the whole, I mean,
but I still don't, I don't agree with it. I absolutely don't agree with that.
This is where we get into the idea of the dichotomy of personal space. Our personal space is that we own that space. Now, can it be mandated that we, in our personal space, can be told what to do?
Well, you know,
this
brings up
the border,
you know,
it's different.
Well, and people are, you know, it's again the liberals that are being the most restrictive, and people that are conservatives that are rebelling against these restrictions that are being imposed on us. So then liberals are now saying to conservatives, well, or conservatives are now saying to liberals, I can't remember what it, the abortion, the whole, you know, they're relating masks to woman's right to choose.
Well,
liberals
see,
are saying, well, you know, we mandate, you know, this.
Now we've turned a condition into a political issue. The issue is the value of life and the safety of human existence. Now it's turned, it's morphed into a political idiom. Now it's conservative, liberal, Trump people,
right?
Biden people, whatever.
Which is annoying to me, because I am not a Trump person and I am typically politically liberal. So I'm not aligning, however, with this, you know, what's being pushed on the liberal agenda right now, according to the mask
element,
and the coronavirus.
We have to preserve our society. So you can't say, listen, this is my car. It's registered to me. If I want to drive 90 miles an hour, I can drive 90 miles an hour. We start to set rules and regulations and everything, because the vacuum, if you will, of society is that we need to be regulated. There needs to be some form of safety. It's just not a frontier where every human being can do whatever they want. So we look at this in the element of the individual versus the collective assemblage of people. And that's always been an issue. Can you be individual within a society? And to what extent does that individual have to incorporate him or herself into a society in which there are rules and regulations and laws, and you just can't do whatever you want?
But this gets into our right to breathe. I mean, this gets into our right to take in and exhale air. And I've seen posts online. There was a post of a woman breathing out in winter, and you can see the breath because it's frosting the breath, and they're saying this is what happens all the time, this is why you need to wear your mask. Well, I know that during the Spanish flu they did impose a mask mandate, I think, and people wore masks. In fact, we saw a picture of a whole family wearing masks, including a cat. It was really cute, actually. Do you remember the picture?
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, rarely in, I mean, how many times in society have we been masked because of the threat of infection?
You know, I made that ridiculous statement. Well, I can't breathe. Well, if you can talk, you can breathe. But but that's ridiculous, because the process of losing breath is a process of suffocating. Your breath is being restricted. And when your breath is being restricted, you're on the pathway to suffocating. to not having breath. So, of course, I mean, what an idiot. If you can talk, you can breathe. It makes no sense. But you can't talk if you're dead. So, of course, in the process of suffocating, you can talk. You can talk. You know, did this idiot cop say, well, now that he's dead, now we know he can't breathe. So I guess, but he was wrong before then. You know, we have to get to the idea. I know when I put on the mask, I can't breathe. I start to feel panicky because my breath is, I don't like being enclosed like that. And it's difficult for me to put that mask on because it's hard for me to breathe. And I don't have the best breathing capacity to begin with. So when I'm putting it on, I can't breathe. I mean, I can, but I can't. I start to feel like I'm suffocating. And the damn mask is going out my breathing, and then it goes up my nose, and it gets hot.
Right, and then
oxygen level is depleted.
And then how often are people changing the mask? And if they're not changing the mask, are they taking it off? I mean, the way that a mask should be taken off and stored, there are several steps that are required to keep that mask sanitary. And I know that people are doing that.
Yeah.
So
and to bring it back to our topic.
Yeah, and we're almost there. So
to bring it back to
we've
our
got
topic
like a 1 minute, so.
Of the astral realm.
Well, you don't need breath in the astral realm. And it's a thing.
The only time you breathe in the astral realm is when you're dreaming. And
right.
You go there and you dream through the silver, you breathe through the silver cord. The soul is still attached to the energy. But remember, when we get to the idea of breath, which we must honor, that's the first thing that God put into us to make us a living soul. So I think in any regard, it's the disrespect of breath. And that's what was being neglected. And oftentimes is neglected throughout our history, that we don't respect that every living thing has a right to breathe. And so I guess that's it for the show.
I think so. Well, we are back on the air on Wednesday at our regular time. We hope you join us then. Bye-bye.